I'm Alexis.
And I'm Kim.
And this is the What You Watchin' podcast. And today we are going to talk about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So I'll just kick it off because I really, really liked this movie. I think there's so much about it. The visuals alone, I was so wrapped up in how beautiful it was. But I think there are a few flaws with it. And I don't necessarily think it's perfect. And I think we'll expand on that a little bit today. So, Kim, what were your thoughts about Across the Spider-Verse?
I think I'm in a very similar place you were. I was immediately sucked in. I do have to admit, I am a bad little critic. I still have yet to see the first one. But I was first and foremost swept away by those visuals. I cannot think of another film, at least that I've seen, at least recently, that's close to that art. I know I put it in my review. I connected it to something like Sleeping Beauty, you know, classic Disney Sleeping Beauty, which is just an event, you know, gorgeous. The art is prioritized above anything else. So you can tell they're trying to convey imagery besides basic just animation. The animation was like another storytelling device for them. You didn't have to necessarily weigh down the story with needless character development or world development, because the art helped you do that. The art shows you what everybody's feeling and what they're thinking and what this world is like without having to stop and tell you, which is a great thing because this movie's a beast.
There are so many like good animated movies. There's a lot, like there's the Pixar stuff. Like there's a lot of things that are good, but I feel like this really utilizes the stylized animation to tell the story in a way that I don't think we see often. Really like I was rewatching the first one recently and I was like, God, this is so beautiful. And I feel like the second one just amps it up even more, where because they have more distinct styles, they really like embrace that more. I think Spider-Punk and Spider-Man India were my favorites just because they were so different, particularly with Spider-Punk, like the way that they're using this stylized like paper textures and all that was just so cool. I mean, even in that very early sequence where they're fighting the vulture, and the vulture is like that, like Da Vinci style, like parchment kind of feel, like that was so cool. It was just one of those things where I was like, okay, like we don't even have to explain any of this. You just show this and we're immediately like, great. We know what universe this guy is from. We know how all this is working out. Like it's such a shorthand for being able to tell a story visually. And I appreciated that so much throughout this movie.
It's a seamless blend between, I mean, Spider-Punk, I think, is a great example of that. Between that art and between Daniel Kaluuya's performance, it makes it. You know everything you need to know right there. And for me, he was probably my favorite character in the piece. He elevates that character. And then the look, he looks so cool, but he sounds cool.
Yes.
And he takes a character that could be, who could fade into the background. He could be kind of tropey. He could be pandering. And he elevates that to be, I would watch that. I would watch a spinoff with that character.
I feel the same way.
I hate to jump on, you know, the franchisee bandwagon. I would watch that spinoff because he was, and then Indian Spider-Man's a great call out too, which that was so perfectly done that you did not need to know much about who this Spider-Man was in this massive multiverse, but he's charismatic and he's the art is flawless. And yet you know everything you need to know within minutes of this character being introduced.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because I do think the movie is too long. I do think there's too much in here, but it's interesting how it combines. Like there is this real shorthand, this real kind of compression of like, we can just get this out there. And in 30 seconds, you kind of know all the backstory or you understand all these things, but then the movie is still 2 hours and 20 minutes long. And it's like, I think that's where, you know, a lot of the critics in our critics group mentioned it's too much of a good thing or whatever. And I think I started to feel that way a little bit, particularly toward the end. Like there were a few there were a few things to me where I felt like they kind of were repeating themes a little too much. So there was a lot of stuff with like Miles's parents where it was like, yes, but we have to let our son grow up or whatever. And you're like, okay. And then like 5 minutes later, there'd be another scene where they're like, see, he's growing up. And sometimes we have to let him grow up. And you're like, right. Okay. And then like, you know, a little bit later, they're like, well, we really need to let him grow up. And it's kind of like, okay, but if maybe do this like twice instead of like seven times, and then this wouldn't be a 2 hour and 20 minute movie. And like, I feel bad saying that because I loved every frame of it in terms of just being able to watch it. But there were times where I was like, okay, we need to just like tighten this up just a little bit. And then I think it would be flawless. Like I think at 2 hours, even this would be amazing.
About 35, 40 minutes too long. I can say I got very uncomfortable about midway through, but then I also called this out in my review. If you're an in-depth hardcore Spider-Man fan, I don't know if you're going to feel the length as much as somebody like myself, who's a casual viewer. This thing is littered with references, and there's absolutely so much to look at, so much to see. Easter eggs abound. This is very much a love letter to Spider-Man.
Totally.
But no, I agree. And then with the ending, you know, it's that long, and then for an ending to just cliffhanger like that, it's a choice, and it was not necessarily a choice that I agree with.
I had some issues with the ending for sure, and it definitely knocked a couple points off of it for me, just because I felt like, you know, there's a, like, you can do a cliffhanger in a way where you have sort of a mini conclusion and it still feels like a satisfying ending.
Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. And then you still leave it open, but it feels like we've done something. I was thinking about like the Fellowship of the Ring, how it's like, we know there's more movies coming. We know the story's not over, but it still ends in a way where you have like, you know, the death of Boromir, and you have Frodo being like, I have to go do this by myself. And Sam's like, I'm coming with you, and things where you're like, okay, we know that's going to propel us into the next thing. But it's still enough of a conclusion that the movie itself feels like kind of a contained story in a way. Like we've had a little mini arc within the overall arc. I know a lot of people like ripped on Dune when it came out, and they were saying how Dune is a half a movie. And it's like, well, it's funny because it's kind of like what I felt about this is how I feel a lot of people felt about Dune, where it's like beautiful visuals, really epic, really amazing to look at, but where's the rest of the story?
Right.
And I felt that not as much with this as I think people did with Dune, but Dune is one of those ones where even then I think they give you a little more of a conclusion. We kind of reach a point with the character of Paul Atreides where it's like, okay, we've kind of had like one chapter done. We know there's more to come, but we've still sort of wrapped up a little bit. This, I think, really started to feel like, oh, okay, we're really building to something, or we're really doing something. We're really being propelled into an action sequence or to the next thing. And then it's just kind of like, all right, well, see you next year. And it felt like such an abrupt stop to the like narrative momentum, in a way that I don't necessarily think other movies with cliffhangers feel. So I wish that we had either like, maybe they had ended it a little bit earlier, or maybe they had gone a little bit further, something to give us a little bit more of a conclusion, to make that ending feel less abrupt. Cause it really was like slamming on the brakes at the end there.
As it builds, I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, this is an ending. I'm like, they're building to, and you're nowhere near any kind of closure as this builds to an end. They literally hit their, you know, their end of their second act as, you know, stuff's about to get real, and then hit on the brakes. It feels like such a franchisey move to literally go, okay. And maybe I'm a bad critic. I had not heard there was even another one ready to go. And there's no Spider-Man will be back known. And it's just like, okay, so what are we sequel baiting that intensely here? It's like, wow, you have a high opinion of your movie there that you're going to hang people out to dry to that extent. And 4.5-star movie. Yeah, you know, people are loving it. People are over the moon about it. And there is so much that's so good about that.
Mm-hmm.
That was, especially with as long as that movie was, to have it feel essentially like a serial.
Yeah.
This is a 2.5 hour long serial, as opposed to finding any kind of cohesive narrative structure there. Give me a little bit of closure. Give me something to wrap it up before you just move yeah. on to the next
it film. was interesting in our screening, because it was like a public screening, and you know, those are, it's always interesting when we see something with critics versus when you see something with the public, or you have more people in the theater. There was a sort of audible disappointment as the credits rolled that this was the end of the story. And I was curious, because I thought, well, everybody's really loving this and people were extremely on board. And then when it did get to the end, there was kind of a, from the audience of like, really, that's it. And I'm interested in the fact that that doesn't seem to be the case with, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes score or the Letterboxd score or any of that, that audiences aren't really bummed about that ending, because I anticipated a little more disappointment in the ending just from right. the audience at our screening. And I think a huge part of it is it, like, again, the rest of it is so good that it just sort of carries it over and people go, well, you know, I'll see the third one. And if I hate the third one, then I'll hate the second one. But you know, I'll give it a chance. Like, I'll wait till the third one before I decide. People are almost looking at it like a two-parter, like with Infinity War and Endgame, where it's like, well, you know, I'm not going to really judge Infinity War until Endgame's out. And I'm wondering if we're getting a little bit of that too here.
Didn't Endgame and Infinity War, wasn't there even a little bit more structure built into that? That didn't end on quite what it ends on the blip,
I mean, it's
right,
it's there was, the downer ending, but it,
I don't
it's
recall
an
it
ending.
Feeling that abrupt it,
yeah,
this just felt like boom, they ran out of film.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's yeah, this would have been like the equivalent of, like, you know,
Monty Python and the Holy Grail. the cops come in, boom, cut.
Yeah, exactly. It did have a little bit of that feel where it was like, oh, that's it. Like, when it cut to the credits, everyone kind of went like, wait, where's the rest of the movie? And
did the film break?
Yeah, like, what happened? Are we missing a reel? Like, what's going on here? But yeah, it's like, if you had where, you know, Thor attacks Thanos and Thanos says, you should have aimed for the head, and like goes up to snap, and then it just goes to credits. And people would be like, what? Like, what happened? Where's the rest of it? So I think, like, you know, I wish we could have had a little more of a conclusive ending on this.
I mean, this is where the industry is right now. The sexy thing is these multiple Fast and the Furious. Didn't they just do the same thing a couple weeks ago? No conclusion whatsoever. Just, oh, come back for the next film. Dune, yeah. Like you've mentioned. Is it working to pull people back? I suppose. I mean, I guess Twilight split into two. One of the Twilights split into
two
movies.
Yeah, that was back in
Harry
the era.
Potter.
Take a YA book and split it. The last one should be split into two. And that was all the rage.
Is it right? But this, it leaves you to feeling like, okay, I just watched a 2.5 hour long prequel, you know, yeah. 2.5 hour long intro. Is it satisfying in the grand scheme of things? I mean in this case it was gorgeous to watch, but if is it needed? I don't know.
Yeah, how do you feel about, like, you know, everything is the multiverse now. Everything is parallel dimensions or alternate universes or things like that. And I mean, like, we're in the era of the multiverse. How do you feel like this movie shapes up in terms of, like, the ranking of all these multiverse movies? Because I was thinking about that last night. And I was like, you know, this part wasn't satisfying and this was this. But then I was like, I still liked this more than Doctor Strange. I liked this more than No Way Home. Like, as far as multiverse movies, like, I think this is my favorite. I liked this more than Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I liked Everything Everywhere All at Once. So I was like, in terms of multiverse movies, though, this is pretty good. You know, it ranks pretty high up there.
I think I'm inclined to agree, because I think I said to you after this film, I said, can we stop going? Do we really need all the expositions for the multiverse? Don't we know what the multiverse is at this point? If you're a comic book action watcher, everybody is doing the multiverse. The Marvel ones have been a little middling for me. I mean, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, I will admit, I don't remember. I've seen it the once. The Spider-Mans, I've been wishy-washy on. Everything Everywhere All at Once was not my pick for Best Picture, despite, you know, I liked it, but I wasn't passionate about it. Mm-hmm. So I think by default, I think this definitely hits the top of that list. I mean, I was certainly, my favorite segment of the film was that chase scene through like the Spider-Man world.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Cowboy so cool. Spider-Man, and the reference where, you know, they're doing the pointing, you know, there, it was so fast, so intense, and there was so much to see. And it was just so, you really had that Lord and Miller voice in there at that point. It was like the Lego movie on steroids.
Yeah.
Them with the amount of money to be able to explore this world. And they were having a heck of a lot of fun, especially in that portion. I thought that was probably my favorite segment in the movie.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I think because there is so much narratively in this movie, sometimes we forget that, like, it's actually very funny. Like, the humor in this is really good and really lands. And I was rewatching the first one and the humor in that same way, where you're like, man, this is, like, all of these jokes are hitting. Nothing overstays its welcome. Nothing feels annoying. It just all really works. And I think because the visuals are so good, because there's so much of the story and there are these dramatic moments that happen and these sort of heavier things, we kind of lose sight of the fact that, like, oh, this is also very funny. But like this, there was a lot of really good humor in here.
I was sucked into the humor. I thought this worked incredibly well as a quippy, quirky, funny family film.
Yeah, I feel like Spider-Man is inherently quippy, and to have that here done in a way that, like, because I think we're all getting very tired of Marvel quippy.
Yeah.
There's like a level of Marvel quippy that I think all the characters start to sound the same and you don't get the distinct personality because everybody's quipping all the time. And here it was like there was enough distinction, but then everyone was still landing the jokes. So it's something that I was like, man, I really dig this. I think like this movie was almost perfect for me. And there was a couple things where it's like, it made me angry that they made certain decisions because I'm like, oh, but you were so close to being perfect, but then you did this and I didn't love that. But the rest of it was so perfect.
Stuck the landing. You just took that step to the back.
Exactly. Like there was just little tiny things, and it feels really like nitpicky in a lot of ways because I'm like, I did really enjoy so much of this, but there were little tiny things that made me go like, oh, I didn't love that part, or like, oh, I wish that was different. But overall, I just feel like I had such a blast with this. The voice cast is so good. Like everybody's amazing. I was loving Oscar Isaac. I love Oscar Isaac in most things anyway. So I was loving him in this. I was just so impressed with so much of it that I think even the bad things, I was like, well, it's probably fine. I mean, maybe I didn't like this part that much, but it's not really that big of a deal. But then the ending was where I went like, that's a little more of a big deal to me. The runtime, I can get over a long movie. Yeah.
Were critics reading too much into something? What?
Yeah, exactly. Took me like 20 minutes to just be like, how do I feel about this? Because part of me is like, you love this. This is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. And then part of me is like, but that ending though.
I mean, to go back to the voice cast, Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
I thought that was such a cool performance. I thought the spot was just such a weird idea, but it was so, I mean, this whole movie is manic.
Yes.
And he very much contributes to that. It's manic and it's fun and it's such a cool performance. And a lot of them were in that way where you're not blinded by, oh, that's a celebrity. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of these movies, you get the celebrity who's not really changing their voice at all, or their voice is so distinctive, or it's like, okay, well, you're completely overpowering your character.
Yeah.
They all blended in so seamlessly that I'm like, oh, I vaguely know most of these voices, but I couldn't peg it. So it allowed me to get lost in the character. Mm-hmm. The spot was just so all over the place and weird. And it was such a strange idea for power that I just loved how Schwartzman played into that.
Absolutely. And God, the visuals of that were so cool. Like the way that the spot was animated early on, and then later after some things happen and the style sort of changes and becomes more chaotic. And man, I would love to watch this again. Even just like, this is the kind of movie you could watch it on mute and still enjoy it, because it's so cool to look at that it feels like it should be in a museum. Like this should be playing on a loop in a museum somewhere forever, because it's just so beautiful to look
at. You can
at.
Screen cap. You could pause and screen cap any moment of this and have frameable art.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even when I was, you know, like I was putting the review together and I was looking at the stills and stuff from it, and I was just like, should I make one of these my wallpaper, like my desktop wallpaper? Like, these are so beautiful. Like, I just want to keep looking at them forever. And I think that's such, like, especially now, I feel like we're so starved for movies that like really are visually interesting, because it's either way too expensive to do something visually interesting, way too risky, or everything's just like, it's shot in the volume, or it's shot in front of a green screen or whatever. And there's no
they
real
have
like,
the Marvel
feel.
Haze.
Yeah, exactly. And this is like, I wish we could embrace animation more, because there's so much stuff you can do. Like, it reminded me of like Love, Death and Robots, which I love, because even if like I'm not vibing with the narrative of a story on that like anthology, the animation is always so amazing that I'm just curious to see more of the style and how the look of it plays out. So I kind of felt like that here, where it was just like, man, like I am just enjoying the visuals of this so much that I wish this was everything. I wish this was like, I wish we got like 5 movies like this a year at least, you know, where we can just watch this amazing visual spectacle.
To make the live action comparison, John Wick 4, you know, we get, it's the same idea, and look at how much can be done if you put an emphasis on how the film looks.
Yeah,
John Wick 4, it's color and action and sets that actually exist. And the same thing here. They're stepping forward from the same mass-produced, vaguely Toy Story-looking thing that we've seen hashed out for the last 25 years.
This is such a collection of brilliant artistic minds coming together to make something amazing. And I think that's what kind of gets lost, is like, it feels like every artist that worked on this has contributed something of their own, you know, of their own mind, of their own creation in here, that is so, just enhances it so much. And I think maybe that it's kind of almost like a factory mentality or whatever with how movies are usually made. I don't know anything about the production of this. Maybe this was like a nightmare to work on and people were, you know, crunched and it was whatever, but you really get the sense that like people really put a lot of thought into each section of the frame, and every part of it was really like, really artistically motivated.
I mean, not to dig on it, Ant-Man, you know, Quantumania had that whole 1970s sepia brown haze hanging over it. And that shows you the typical what we're dealing with right now. And to see these two, you know, Into the Spider-Verse step out, and the fluorescence, you know, Gwen Stacy, you know, fighting, and the rainbows, and the, you know, the other world, you know, there's a moody noir world in there. I don't know the comic booky terms. There was one world where it's like you're caught in a film noir, you know. It was,
they even had a Lego world.
Keep saying
there.
It it's gorgeous. Yeah, they had a Lego world in there.
It was so cool. And it's like, I it's funny, there was a sequence in Multiverse of Madness where Doctor Strange is like, they're tumbling through like alternate universes, and one was like where they were made of paint and all this stuff. And I remember they used it in the trailer and I thought, oh, this is so cool. We're going to get to see all these different multiverses and some of them are going to be so visually interesting. And then it was like, no, not really. You're going to get to see like the one you know, and then one that's really similar to the one you know, but with like purple flowers everywhere. It was like, okay, so like nothing actually new or different. And I loved this because it was like, no, you do get stuff that's new and different. You do get really distinct mm-hmm. styles and animation. Of course, it's easier to do that. But it was like, yeah, if you're going to give me multiverse. Like, let me see actual different
exactly.
stuff.
Yeah, shooting limitations aside, maybe if you can't do justice to it, maybe we shouldn't have every third superhero movie set in the multiverse or the quantum realm or these, if it's too expensive to shoot, just put it on the soundstage and, you know, build it, do whatever.
Totally. But
there's such thought that goes into animation, and this movie uses it incredibly well. It can be used to enhance the world. It can be used to do things you can't do in real life. And this movie shows how animation can be used as a benefit.
The first one has absolutely gorgeous animation, but this one is like, okay, now we're known for this and now we can go hard on gorgeous exactly. animation. And I'm so glad that they did.
That as I've admitted, I have not seen the first one. How do you feel this lived up to the first one? If you're a fan of the first one, is this the same? Is this better? What would you say?
I would say this is visually better than the first one, but I think the narrative in the first one is a little tighter. And I mean, you know, it's an introduction to this basically.
Right.
So it can be a tighter narrative. But I really like the kind of the story, I think flows a little better in the first one, but again, it's like, if this is, you know, a trilogy, then, you know, it's hard to judge movie number two for, you know, movie number one gets to do all the setup and all the easy stuff. Movie number three gets to do the conclusion. But if movie number two has to do kind of the work, I get where narratively maybe, you know, doesn't always compare very fairly. But I love the first one, but I love the visuals of this one more. So it was kind of, I'm kind of torn on.
Okay. It's hard for the second. Oh, you know, the seconds are always such a departure, and maybe that's what they're doing here. The Two Towers is a dark film. Empire Strikes Back is a dark film. They're towards the end, they're definitely wanting to take this a little darker, but it's so maybe they're playing into that a little bit.
I'm definitely looking forward to the third one. And even if the third one is like 3 hours long, like I know it's going to be so beautiful that I'm like, I could probably experience 3 hours of like the most visually magical thing I've ever seen. I was telling our friend Leo that I felt like being in Meow Wolf watching this movie where like you go in Meow Wolf and you're just like, oh my God, like everything around you is so visually cool and interesting.
Sensory overload.
Exactly. You're just like, I know like we've been here for 4 hours, but could we just stay here for the rest of the day because it's so amazing? And this is kind of like that, where it's like, even when you're not like necessarily loving the pace of the story, you're loving the visuals so much that you kind of can not care that much about parts of the story that are maybe not the best or maybe not your favorite.
Completely.
Well, I feel like we've covered it. I mean,
what do we have coming next? I think we're both at Asteroid City.
Yes. I think Asteroid City is coming up. Another one that, you know, again, Wes Anderson allowed to do visual, interesting things. I'm dying for movies that give me something visually cool now. So I'm looking
forward
to that.
Wes Anderson has always been his own thing. That man has bent to no expectations. He's quirky,
a genre
unabashedly quirky.
Exactly. To the point where he's a TikTok trend all his own, you know? So, yeah, I think that'll be a fun one. That'll probably be our next review. And then I think I think we'll have The Flash, I think, coming up after that. Another multiverse thing, because that's what we do now. Everything's the multiverse.
Everything's the multiverse.
Thank you so much for watching and listening and all that stuff. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, follow us on the socials, all the various things. And thank you so much.